All right, welcome everybody. If you're here for the COLA study report public comment forum, you're in the right place. My name is Chad Burkett. I'm an analyst for the LCPR. I'm joined by Susan Lucheski, our executive director, and Lisa Dieselin, our commission assistant. just another reminder that our meeting today is recorded. And please mute yourself if you're not talking. The recording should be made publicly available later. So just be aware. You should have all received a copy of the agenda that we sent out yesterday and is available on our website if you don't have it with you right now. We'll be going through a few things here to start off with, as it says on the agenda, and then we'll turn things over to you to hear your public comments. I saw that Senator Senjum had joined us, so welcome to him.
And Representative Nelson.
And Representative Nelson. And we may have a couple others join us as we go. So first, I just have a quick statement that I prepared. The core policy questions related to the COLA benefit are, should we have a COLA? If so, how much? And what form should the COLA take? I believe reasonable people can and do disagree about the best answers to those questions, and there are no objectively correct answers. Rather, the answer to those core policy questions reflect Minnesotans' values and their political process. Accordingly, this report does not attempt to answer those core policy questions. Rather, it is the purpose of this report to provide the objective information needed to have an informed public discussion regarding COLA policy for Minnesota's public pensions. This forum and the public comments many of you have already submitted serve two important purposes. The first is to inform Susan and I, the report drafters, of the various viewpoints held by the public so that we can assure that information relevant to those viewpoints is included in the report. And the second purpose is to inform legislators and others of the various viewpoints held by the public in order to assist with policy setting and the legislative process. To that end, your spoken comments here today, again, will be recorded and made publicly available, and your written comments will be appended to the end of the final report that we transmit to the commission members. With that, I will turn it over to Susan for a few comments.
Hi, good morning, everybody. Thanks, Chad. My name is Susan Lucheski. I'm the director of the LCPR, the commission. Just wanted to quickly go through what has sort of fired since the last time this group got together, and that was on October 20th. Since then, led by Chad, we've compiled the report. It consists of the many parts that you probably have read through, or at least we hope you read through in the draft report. It consists of sections that have been drafted by the two of us, with assistance from the pension fund directors and staffs, the legislative or legal staff from the pension funds. Just to note that what we're doing here again is not advocacy, so none of the pension fund directors or staffs had any role in sort of recommending or trying to advocate a particular position. We are all just working on providing summaries, overviews of Minnesota legislative history and analysis of how COLAs compare to various inflation measures and over history, over time, how they have done in remaining sort of somewhat consistent or not to inflation. So after that report was compiled, on about November 20th, we sent the report to this group. A couple days later to all the legislators on the commission and on legislative staff. We also sent the report to the pension fund directors and their staffs. And then of course posted it on our website for anybody who is taking a look at the website. It's posted there. So that was about a month ago. Since that time then we met with the pension fund directors. We wanted to have a meeting just with them because they had a very important role in drafting the report. And we wanted to hear their comments, suggestions, areas they thought needed to be expanded or new topics maybe addressed. So we heard from the pension fund directors and staffs at a meeting on December 2nd. Since around about that time, we've also been receiving letters from you all. I believe we have 8 letters in our folder, and we appreciate those very much, and we'll be taking those into account together with the comments today. So that is the kind of timeline of what has happened. At the end, we'll talk about next steps going into the future. I'm going to turn it back to Chad to do an overview of the report and just go through some of the major sections of the report.
Thanks, Susan. So this first draft is definitely a draft. So we anticipate that we'll be making some changes to it, maybe even some significant changes to it before producing the final draft that we'll send to the commission members. and so it's not complete, as you may have noticed as you're looking through it. And maybe it's a little bit more rough than we'd like in some areas. But the way that it's set up now is we have it organized into 8 major sections. The first section is the introduction, which you'll notice is largely incomplete, in part because we wanted to have that section reflect what's actually occurred in the study, which hasn't been completed yet. And also because we anticipated that we might make changes to the report that we'd want to reflect in the introduction. This next section is called Post-Retirement Adjustments in Minnesota, which includes the legislative history and a short discussion on the 2018 legislative changes. The third section deals specifically with the COLAs and protecting the buying power of pensions, and then we're looking at inflation and retiree costs of living. The sections 4, 5, and 6 are really analysis sections where we looked at Minnesota's post-retirement adjustments and how well they protect against inflation. In section 5, we looked at coordinated versus basic plans and how those two plans differ when they protect against those two types of plans differ when they protect against inflation. And in section 6, we looked specifically at the new PAIR method that came out of the 2018 legislation and tried to analyze whether it was an improvement on the old method. Section 7 looks at variation design. So there we stepped back a little bit and looked more globally at what COLA design options there are around the country and what other public pension plans are doing. And we included a short section on some case studies where we looked specifically at a few different states. And then finally, we have an incomplete conclusion section. There again, we wanted to wait until we were done with the study before committing ourselves to anything, but we did put down some kind of tentative conclusions that we hope to hear some comments on. So moving on to section 3 on the agenda, or the third item on the agenda. So in the weeks since we sent this out, we've just identified already a few things that we know we want to change. The first is the introduction section and conclusion, obviously not complete, and so we'll be working on completing those in the next couple weeks. And then, as I've already alluded to, we're considering reordering some of the sections of the report, especially the section on COLA design, considering moving that towards the front of the report. And then we're looking at expanding the discussion on the cost of these COLA benefits. And I think one of the areas that this first draft probably doesn't do a good job of is just describing some of the trade-offs that are associated with providing these COLA benefits. These COLA benefits are expensive, they cost a fair amount of money, and there's not really a good sense of how much they cost. And we think a fair discussion on COLAs requires some discussion of the trade-offs. I'll turn it over to Susan for the other two.
Yeah, and just to note, with regard to the cost of the COLAs, we have asked the plans, and they are willing to help us with that. So what we have in there is some information that we were able to pull out from the 2018 discussion. And that really looks to the savings to the plans. And it doesn't really look very specifically at actually what the cost would be, say, to increase COLAs, you know, by 0.5% or something like that. So we're hoping to get information from the plans that is directly addressing what the cost of a COLA is and what it would mean if they were say increased or decreased. So going on through the items here that we're hoping to work a little bit more on, the discussion right now of the other states' COLA approaches, these are in Wisconsin, South Dakota, and Colorado, we think need to be expanded a bit. So we'll be working on providing a little bit more analysis of how those COLAs work. And I'll just note that both Wisconsin and South Dakota were picked in part because their COLAs are really focused on the plans are in connection with the COLAs they are providing are really focused on keeping their plans at 100% funded, which of course is something that the legislature is always looking at and weighing as we look at COLAs. So we hope to expand on that discussion. And then another, and by the way, that's starts on page 47 right now in the report. If you didn't get that far, it's towards the end of the report. And then another thing that we would like to look at a little bit more closely is what is the law in Minnesota on COLA changes? These are for just the public pension plans. So on page 2, we very briefly mention a case, Swanson versus State of Minnesota, on page 12 of the report. And it sort of provokes some thought, I think, on the part of Chad and I, that it would be helpful to kind of do a bit of an overview of what right now the court decisions say about COLAs and making changes to COLAs. So I think the leading case in Minnesota anyway, and doesn't have a lot of precedential value, but is this case, but there are others, and we'll be looking at those and adding a section on that. And then I also just wanted to note that in the comments that we've already received, and we're going to talk more about this, Chad and I, and figure out how to deal with this, but there is mention in a number of the comments on the principles of pension policy, just to mention that we are considering adding a short section, maybe close to the beginning of the report on that. We did not include anything about the principles because they're a bit out of date. And I think there are some sort of internally inconsistent principles even as it relates to COLAs, but there was some focus on that in the comment letters. And so we'll most likely look at including a little bit of a discussion on the relevant principles. So turning it back to Chad, I think we're ready for some comments from some of the participants in this meeting.
And one thing I forgot to mention, guys, is we sent out an addendum to the first draft, which was a portion that we actually prepared with the first draft. And then when we were putting that draft together, we kind of inadvertently left it out. And we just wanted to get it out to you all for you to review as well. So that section would be actually included in the variations on COLA design section. So if you see all that, that's kind of how that happened. So I think we're ready for comments from the public. I'll just ask you to keep your comments to about 5 minutes or so. Once you hit 5 minutes, Lisa might jump in and just let you know that you're at 5 minutes. And if you could just wind things up at that point, that would be great. So we have you in order on the agenda here, and I'll just ask Mr. Winkleman to start us off, and if you could just let us know, just state your name and let us know if you represent anyone and what you're about. Thanks.
Sure. Thank you very much, and thank you for letting me comment. I'm Kurt Winkleman. I'm a senior fellow with the Heller Hurwitz Economics Institute at the University of Minnesota. I've been working on pension policy issues for the last 4 or 5 years. So my first comment is, I think this is a very comprehensive and well done report. I think it succeeds. It hits its goals of being informative and identifying and starting to identify some of the trade-offs. That said, I do have some comments on both informative and substantive. At least I think they're substantive. On the informative side, you talk about inflation forecasts. There are two additional sources that I personally I would reference in a report like this. One of them is what the bond market is saying. So I checked this morning, and typically the bond market measures things, looks at the spread between the yield on nominal 30-year bonds and real 30-year bonds, and that's about 2%. The other source I checked this morning is the Federal Reserve System Board of Governors has a report that shows long-term forecasts for real growth and inflation. Their number is also 2%. So those are just some additional sources that are worth looking at. I think it's worth pointing out the report that forecasts can and often are wrong. And it turns out to inflation specifically, when it happens, it tends to happen suddenly, not gradually. So even though it seems benign now, in 10 years, there could be significant negative surprises in terms of purchasing power surprises. Actually, I think your illustrations of the effects on purchasing power for retirees on the plans was very well done. And it highlights the importance of the issue, in other words, why it should be considered when we talk about plan design. So I thought that was very well done. You have a discussion of life expectancy, which I think is also incredibly relevant. The one thing I would suggest you do is use not the life expectancy at birth numbers, but the life expectancy at 65, which I'm 64. So actually I'm very cognizant of that number now personally. And it's a different number than the one at birth. It's longer. And I thought actually the discussion of separating about what's done historically in terms of the post-retirement changes into an inflation part and then a investment related component, that was quite well done. On the more substantive comments, and Susan touched on these, one of the things in terms of COLA design, and this just gets back to how economists tend to think, economists tend to prefer rules that just don't change that often. They tend to not like ad hoc changes. And the big reason for this is that rules are more easily digestible by workers, investors, consumers, taxpayers, everybody. So when the rules are clear, and it's clear that they're not going to change on an ad hoc basis, has tended to work out better, at least according to economists, of which I plead guilty as I'm one. There's a second point that you alluded to in the report, but you didn't really get into it, and Susan just mentioned it, is the tension between COLAs as a benefit and contributions. And the specific point where I think it's important is the discussion, again, Susan alluded to it, of what Wisconsin and South Dakota have done. So I think as you look into this more, and I'm glad you're doing that, you'll discover that they've been very consciously linked COLAs and funding status and contributions. There's more I can go into that, but I'm kind of limited now on time. So that's about it. I mean, I think, like I said, the report was very well done. It raises very interesting issues. As you said at the beginning, very interesting and important issues, but as you said at the beginning, there are trade-offs. I hope that some of these comments are helpful to you in thinking about the trade-offs. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Mr. Earhart, is that right? Lisa, if you're talking, you're on mute.
Can you hear me now?
There we go, yeah.
Okay. thank you for asking for our input into the COLA study report. My name is Paul Earhart, and I am president of the Retired Educators Association of Minnesota. REAM supports COLAs for all retired public employees, and especially for members of REAM. We agree with the LCPR principles of pension policy statement that benefits levels that should be kept adequate by adjusting the benefit for the rate of inflation. However, COLA reports that the purpose of Minnesota post-retirement adjustments is to fix the decline in the loss of purchasing power of a fixed monthly payment due to inflation. The COLA study reports that the purchasing power for most Minnesota retirees has been steadily decreasing. It also states that it is unlikely that the post-retirement adjustments will fully cover the retirees' loss of purchasing power. On a personal note, I can agree with that. The purchasing power of our family, my wife and I, for 2021 will decrease from the increases from Social Security and TRA. The 1% COLA will not cover increases in medical insurance, prescription drugs, personal items, et cetera, et cetera. In my past years of coaching and teaching, I turned down several offers to coach at large universities because they did not offer the long-term security that the defined benefits with a reasonable COLA would provide. I would like to remind the panel that Minnesota teachers have paid to the TRA on or above the national average for Social Security states for over 50 years. The defined benefit retirement plan, which when supplemented by an adequate COLA, is a great recruiting tool to keep quality educators in Minnesota. And last but not least, REAM members have great concerns with the statement, protection for the loss of purchasing power will involve trade-offs. There are many examples of actives and retirees in Minnesota having done more than their fair share for keeping the retirement fund solvent when the legislature has underfunded the fund as reported by the annual required contribution, the ARC. Because we have Minnesota educators receive a lower level of compensation because of our perceived notion that at the end of the line, we would be able to enjoy an adequate retirement, I like to refer to our DB, defined benefit pension, COLA, as a deferred compensation. One of our members has coined that phrase quite a while ago, and it seems very apropos. Again, thank you for the opportunity to discuss this issue on this venue.
Thank you, Mr. Earhart. Next we have Ms. Duberstein. Mr. Duberstein, and you're on mute, sir.
Hello, everyone, and thanks to the LCPR staff for the hours needed to create this COLA study report. The openness and the effort used to include comments, written and oral, are much appreciated. The study is historical, comprehensive, and points toward many avenues for further study, and thank you again for your work. I am Lonnie Duberstein, a proud and grateful career educator from the Roseville Area School District and currently president of the Roseville Area Retired Employees Association, past president of the Retired Educators Association of Minnesota, and co-chair of the REAM Legislative Committee with Tim Moynihan, John Fisher, and Henry Carboni. Stating an essential reminder for most everyone logged into the meeting today, most, if not all of us, are or were public employees. We have done and do the people's work for a comparatively modest income. Our long-term reward is a promised, secure, livable pension that we contributed to during our working years. In reality, the pension benefit and COLA make up a delayed compensation retirement package for our public service. One of the necessary strengths incorporated into the pension is the COLA, a post-retirement adjustment that benefits all Minnesota communities through taxes paid and money spent. Unlike several states, Minnesota's pension benefits are fully taxed. I wonder how many dollars are returned to the state in taxes each year from the $4 billion of benefits paid out. Dollars earned by Minnesota retirees are not destined to get lost in some Cayman Island account. Public employees, retirees need to spend their retirement money. So retirement benefits recycle to keep the communities economically healthy. Dollars invested in COLA benefits do not just disappear into a black hole. They enter the economy of every community in Minnesota. A very definitive statement about the impact of pension dollars toward the communities is shown using the MSRS map to show the combined effects that the payments paid by PARA, TRA, and MSRS, over $4 billion dramatically adds to Minnesota's economy's strength, with almost 90% of the retirees choosing to remain to live in Minnesota. As stated in the COLA study report, Minnesota's post-retirement adjustments primary purpose is to mitigate the adverse effects of the increasing cost of living due to inflation. Figures 11 through 16 of the report show a distressing decline in retirees' future purchasing power. Communities will be affected. Public service jobs may not have the lure for recruitment and retention that they once had. The years 2011 and 2012 brought the TRA COLA to zero. That two-year loss will never be made up. It is gone. In 2019, COLAs were cut in half for 5 years. After that, they were set to increase by 0.1% until topping out at 1.5%. Another way to look at it, thousands of retirees will wait 10 years until 2028 to get back 75% of the COLA they once had in 2018. If one's financial planner had given them that prognosis, they probably would be looking for a different financial planner. In the historical ups and downs of COLAs, this study is well warranted. The legislature must understand the tremendous impact their decisions have on Minnesota's public employees. The legislature must remember the real goal of COLAs as stated in the study report. The legislature should keep in mind the familiar quote, first, do no harm. And finally, the legislature ought to contemplate the question, how do we make COLAs that reach the goal and better serve our retirees? Thank you again for this opportunity to share these thoughts.
I'm just gonna pop in for a second. Pension Commission Chair Representative Murphy has joined us, along with Representative Nelson and Senator Senjum from the commission.
Welcome. And next we have Mr. Moynihan.
I thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. And along with my colleagues, Paul and Lonnie, we are very much in appreciation of all the work that Chad, that you and Susan have done and your staff, because this is an important conversation to us because we are stakeholders. But we also try to take, as Lonnie was saying, the larger view of what is good for our state and for our profession as educators. I would, as I look at the study, one thing that becomes very clear to me is that we want to be modest because we're Minnesotans, but we really have a very unique pension law and the way that we do business and how we take care of employees. And as we seek to compare it to other states, even though they would seemingly be successful in what they're doing with their COLAs, it is a difficult comparison to make. And I think that we need to be focused on that. What do you mean? Well, Lonnie mentioned the taxation of benefits. We tax Social Security and we tax our COLAs and our pensions. One of the states that we were mentioning earlier, and Mr. Winkleman has said in his papers about Wisconsin, is that, you know, Wisconsin does not tax benefits. If there was no taxation, what would that mean for retirees in Minnesota? A question to be answered. The other thing is the oversight of the LCPR itself and this commission. And members of the commission who are here present, we want to thank you for your service, because having a commission like that is very unique in the United States. And it kind of says what Minnesotans feel about taking care of their retirees. We are concerned as stakeholders about the constitutional guarantees that are in place in our state. And perhaps that was the wisdom of our founders and people early on to make it so, because then the LCPR can do its job, monitor and adjust things as they go, and do the best for the retirees that is possible. Mandated COLAs and funding levels exist in law throughout the United States. And again, as we look at how Minnesota compares, we compare very differently to other states. And so then the question, a rhetorical one right now, is what do we want for our Minnesota retirees? Because we have a very unique place to be. I would mention to you also that it would be difficult to put it into a scientific study based on data that Chad and Sousa have presented to us, because, you know, it is important for us to understand what we know about the stakeholders, groups like Ed Minnesota and St. Paul Teachers and Ream and other groups. We could give you plenty of anecdotal information about what our members think about COLAs and what has been going on with them. But again, this is information that's difficult to measure. And there are studies that have been made by the National Institute of Retirement and Securities that I mentioned to you, Chad, in our previous meeting. And I think it's very instructive because it does talk about the attitudes. And when we hear our young teachers saying, well, Social Security isn't going to be there for us, even though it's coordinated with our pension. And when we hear our not so young teachers saying, we're concerned that we would even have a pension that's anything like what the people who've retired before me have. Those are things that we hear and are concerned about. I think, as was mentioned by both my colleagues, the medical costs that retirees are facing today have been a concern of our nation, not just of our COLAs and our pensions. And we all know them to be very unpredictable, except for one thing, they continue to go up. And the COLA is just one more measure that we have that allows us to, how should I say, survive such changes. Because we are living in, and will likely be living in for a while, a pandemic, these pressures apply to COLAs more than ever. And I think it is important for us to understand that is the role of COLAs. Inflationary costs have been historically low in recent years, but we have all lived through, at least people in my age group, and perhaps Walt and others would attest, when we had, you know, double digit inflations. What we do know is that they go up.
I'm going to interrupt for a second. You've reached your 5 minutes. If you can wind up your comments, please. Thanks.
Thank you. In conclusion, what I would like to say is that as we have faced this $641 million deficit, or I should say deficit surplus that has been reported, we look at it as something that, hey, maybe that we won't have to be touching the COLAs or the pensions this year. I think that as we look at a new normal in our lives in general, I think it would be important for us to seek to do what was mentioned by Mr. Winkleman about having COLAs levels that have consistency, and that we have COLAs that are COLAs that giveth. They don't taketh away when we tax them and do things to them after they're given. I thank you very much for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, sir. And next up we have Mr. Johnson.
Hi. I guess I wasn't sure I was on the list. And I apologize for that. You know, my name is Dave Johnson. I represent the Minnesota Municipal Retirement Association. First of all, I guess I'd like to thank the staff for putting this report together. It's a significant undertaking, and it's clear that a lot of work has gone into it. Second, I'd like to thank the commission for taking written comments, of which I've submitted some, and I won't reiterate those comments here. I guess the main couple points I would make is that, you know, I would go back to the legislative pension commission's policy principles document. And I might be dating myself here, but that document took years of study. It was something approved by the commission. And it was supposed to be guidelines that set, you know, with respect to how pension legislation is looked at and determined. And I would just ask the commission to look at that document. If it's not a relevant document for those members of the commission on the call, then it should be repealed. If it's still a relevant document, I think it needs to be discussed in the report, because it looks to me like in the report, the standard that is being articulated, and this is in my comments, is separate and distinct from the standard for post-retirement benefits compared in the principles. And I think it's important. The principles speak of offsetting costs over time of inflation. And the draft report speaks to managing the decline of the benefit. Those seem like two different standards. And it seems to me that when it gets before the commission, that's gonna be a pretty critical part of this report. The second piece I would just reiterate, and then I'd be done, is, you know, in the report, everybody likes to talk about the 1990s and the benefit increases in the 1990s. And I think those of us that have been around for a while know that those have been significant benefits. But I think if you're going to talk about the benefits in the 1990s, I think you really need to do some analysis of what current retirees are actually getting those benefits. You know, when we've asked that question of PERA, it is not a majority of retirees. It's less than a majority. And by some measures, much less of a majority. And I think the distinction is that somehow current retirees benefited in the late 1990s from these massive COLA increases. And somehow that justifies COLA increases now that don't keep up with the cost of living. And I would, you know, I just think that if that is, you know, to the extent you're talking about those massive COLA increases, you've got to do the analysis of how many people actually got them, because most of them did not. So maybe I'll end it there, but I just want to say thank you for all the work that's gone into the report, and look forward to continuing the dialogue, and certainly appreciate the opportunity for public input. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Mr. Rice.
Thank you, Chad and Susan and the whole Pension Commission staff. This is really a good report, but I think it needs some additional work. And that, I don't mean that as a criticism. I think that Chad said that at the outset. This is really a massive undertaking. Minnesota employs over 10%. The public sector in Minnesota, state, local government, school district employs over 10% of all Minnesotans. And I would suspect that percentage has even gone up in this COVID period in time, because government tends to hold on to its employees rather than shed them in an economic circumstance like this. And so we've got over 300,000 public employees covered by these plans, and we've got over 200,000 retirees. Now, my numbers are approximate. I haven't had a chance to look at the most recent actuarial reports, but I think that's pretty accurate. So we're talking about 500,000 people's lives in this circumstance, and most significantly, those 200,000 retirees. So I think given the magnitude of what we're talking about, we should take as much time as necessary to make sure you assemble all of the data. One thing I commented in the letter, and I'm glad to hear Chad say that, what is this gonna cost? And I think really the measurement should start from where we're at now to what the pension commission principles said, as Mr. Johnson was talking about. And, you know, that's 8 point. It's on page 2 of the principles. I think it bears all of us seeing that the current LCPR policy is benefit retirement should be increased during the period of retirement to offset the impact of economic inflation over time in order to maintain a retirement benefit that was adequate at the time of retirement. That's our measurement stick. And I think that the report does a good job in illustrating how over time we're not meeting that standard. What I think is needed to add is, what would it be if we were going back, say, 20 years, or even going forward, even using the 2% assumption that Kurt talked about as kind of the best information we have on that topic now, just to see what the cost is. Are we going to get there? I mean, candidly, the cost of that would be enormous. I think everybody who's on this phone over the last decade has worked to make the pension system sustainable as it is. We've had to make sacrifices. That's what we talked about in 18, the shared sacrifice concept. I note in my letter that a lot of that sacrifice has gone on these retirees. And very clearly it has. The 2010 legislation in the last year of the Pliny administration, the retirees bore the brunt of that. The 13 legislation, and as the report notes on it in its current stage, we were talking $6 billion, I think, from the retirees and foregone changes in COLAs that even then may not have measured up to the standard of the pension commission. And so I know I'm sounding critical. I don't mean to be, because we've all worked on this together to come up with a solution and be fair to these retirees. But it's gotten to the point, as Mr. Johnson said, and we've heard from some of the teachers, is it's really starting to hurt. I mean, 1% COLAs or no COLAs have a cumulative effect. It's affecting 200,000 Minnesotans. The days of the 90s, I'll be candid, my father died in office. She started receiving a pension in 1997. And quite frankly, that was a great time to have a pension in those years. And that pension served her well up until when she died 2 years ago. But a lot of that cohort is now passed on, and we have to look at, you know, what's there and what's present. And I would submit the pension commission policy is the right one. Whether we can live up to it or not, I think we need to have the economic analysis on it. I mean, Dick Jefferson was central to a refresh on that. I mean, stating this in the 90s, Representative Murphy, Chair Murphy worked on this and reaffirmed that during one of her several chairmanships on it. I think it is the right policy. The report notes that half, roughly, of all the 100 studied pension policies around the country have inflation as the measure. We get inflation through Social Security. We're coordinated with Social Security. So fortunately, that group of people has a measure of inflation by the federal government. I'm speaking on behalf of the retired police group and the firefighters. Those basic plan members are, you know, fall behind because we don't have Social Security. Mr. Johnson's group doesn't. I know I'm coming up on my time quickly, but
yep. I'm going to interrupt real quickly and tell you, Richie, 5 minutes if you can wrap up.
Yeah, let me just say quickly, let's try to do this right and get as much data as we can on paper. I think this coming session is going to deal with a lot of other issues than pensions. We know the $18 billion in pensions was going to take a good 5 years to set in and see how it works. And I'll just say it again. Minnesota has always done pensions on the cheap. We spent 2.5% of all of our state and local government spending on pensions. The national average is 4.5%. Kurt was right. It's a equation of COLAs versus funding and contributions. And, you know, quite frankly, the states, if the state of Minnesota can't treat its public employees with the dignity and respect that they can, why would they treat anyone else that way? And, you know, we're living in some really difficult times of economic disparity. And for God's sakes, let's not subject anyone to that, but particularly our public safety workers, our teachers, our government workers, our state workers, county and city workers. Thanks for the opportunity to speak on this.
And thank you, Mr. Rice. I think that's all the people that we had signed up to speak today. I just want to open the floor up to Representative Murphy, Representative Nelson, and Senator Senjum, and see if you want to make any comments before I open it up to everybody else. And I'm not trying to put you on the spot either.
I'm not seeing anything.
Okay. Then I'll just ask if anybody else has anything they want to say briefly.
I am also not seeing anything. If anybody does want to talk, there is, you have an option to raise your hand or put your video on and wave at me.
Lisa?
Yes.
Just a point. Chad, you said something about an appendix that you had sent out, and I don't, did I miss that? I know I read the report. The first draft study, COLAs, they dated the 20th, was that it? Yeah, November 20th. But did you say there was an appendix that you sent around? Because if you did, maybe I missed it, or maybe I...
There is. I sent another email to the list. It is posted on our website, right on the top of the page.
Okay. All right.
It was just a section that was missing.
All right. I'll find it. Thank you.
Okay, so then just really quick, our next steps here, and thanks again to everybody who provided comments, written comments and spoken ones today. We'll carefully consider them as we're making our changes to the draft and finalizing the report. Our next steps, we're looking at completing the final draft of the report here around the end of the year, and we will send out a copy of that report to the commission members, and we'll post it on our website. And then sometime during the 2021 legislative session, and of course, subject to the decision of the commission chair, the commission will be asked to adopt the report. And this can only happen at a public meeting. And at that time, they'll have the option to modify, adopt, or reject the report. And then we anticipate there'll be more time, again, subject to the commission chair for testimony at that time. All right. I think that concludes the meeting. Again, thanks everybody for participating, and the session here starts in less than a month, so we'll be seeing you all again soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you.